Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Leeds City Varieties. Please welcome a man who's been backflipping his way onto stage. It's Richard Herring.
Good as last week's audience, I have to tell you that. So, blimey. Lovely to see you. Thank you for coming back this week. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Static Traffic podcast. Pretty cool. You'll find out more about that in a second. But I was on the All Creatures Great and Small Yorkshire Dales tour today, and a man with his hand up a cow's bottom said he called it Rahulastapa. So it's a... How lovely to hear the old Creatures Great and Small hand up the bottom joke. I've never been able to make one before. It's nice to have one. I genuinely didn't think I was going to get here today. There was a really bad accident on the M1. We set off at midday. We got to, from Hertfordshire and we got to Leeds at just after 6. And we would still be on that road. We were just sort of stuck for about 2 hours. Just edging towards Leicester Forest East. You know, it's a fine service station. And Beck, my tour manager, was saying, look, if you look on the map, there's a back entrance or exit out of the service station. I said, that won't... we won't be able to get through there. That one won't work. Just, we should stay on the road. And she insisted we got off. We both needed a wee by this stage anyway. So we got off. The service station was packed. The people were saying, yeah, apparently it's not going to be clear till 6:30. So I'd absolutely thought, right, that's it. Then we're not going to Leeds. It's all over. What a disaster. But we went the way Beck said. And then she took a secret left instead of a right. And there was no traffic at all. We got onto the M1 on the correct junction in no time at all. And we made it. So I'd just like everyone to give my tour manager, Beck, an amazing round of applause for getting us here. Otherwise, this would never have happened. I said to her, if this goes wrong, you're fired. But because it went right, it means she can do one thing that she would get fired for. And I can't do anything. So I'm quite worried about what that'll be because... I'm not the easiest person to tour with. She'll take a revenge. You may know I give all of the guests a mug that's exclusive to the guests. It says, I was a guest on Rahulastapa. Thank you. But we had to rush out the car park. I stuffed these in like in our camera case. Hello, camera. And this one broke. The one for Amma's is broken. Bad luck, innit? I thought about just giving him any old mug. But I've got a exclusive. I've got an exclusive signed broken mug. If anyone would you like that? Stick on eBay, mate. Right, let's crack on. My guest this week, he's probably best known for playing the blind busker in Love Soup. Will you please welcome Amma Latif, ladies and gentlemen. Out the way. I'm sitting down. Amma Latif. It was brought on by a mysterious lady.
When you want to know.
I do, yeah.
That's Raya like fire.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm hammer like hammer.
It's good to have her system.
Isn't it? I hope she's there when I've finished.
I'm heading straight out there, so I'm just leaving you here. Yeah.
Well, if there's any one of those ladies out there that wants to guide me, feel free to come and guide me. You know,
very nice. Tell us about being in Love Soup. Was that a film or a TV?
Oh, it was TV like a BBC TV series, and
David Renwick, right?
Yes, and it was with the lovely Tamsin Gregg.
Yeah,
and I played this part of this busker. And I'm sat with the guitar and playing away, and she comes to try to put some money in my little box,
yeah.
But she drops her purse, and all I'm hearing is this lady's picking up my stuff all the money out of my box, and I stop playing, and I'm like, "Excuse me, are you robbing me?" And she's like, "No, no, sir, no, no, sir." And then I actually get my cane, and I'm running after her in this program. But yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and quite rare for a part of a disabled person in a TV show to be played by an actual disabled person. So that's...
Yeah, well, it helps.
Yeah, it's good, but it does help. But you know, you win an Oscar if you aren't disabled and play a disabled.
Well, actually, when I was younger, I did a bit of amateur dramatics, and I went to my first gig, and the producer said, "You know, how will you manage? You know, like you're blind. How will you know how to walk around on the stage and know where everyone is?" And I remember saying, "Look, I'm an actor, and actors pretend to do things. I tell you what, I'll just pretend I can see." So I just counted my footsteps in each direction, and yeah. No one ever actually knew that I was blind.
Yeah.
Actually, I like your bald head.
Thank you. We took a photo beforehand, and he reached up and said, "Oh, you're much smaller than I was expecting. You sound like you're tall."
It's because Richard's got such a wonderful voice, you know, and it seems like it's projecting.
Yeah.
And my arm went up there and it just blew past him.
I sound like a giant, that's what I sound
like. Hi. Hi, Richard. So I just need to make sure I've got the right eye line here.
You do very well. So look, for people who don't know, I know you've told this story a lot of times, but yeah. Could you tell? So you were told when you were like a very small child that there was a chance you were going to go blind, or that you were going to go blind.
That's not true.
No,
it was when I was 16.
You tell the story. Okay, really? All right.
Too much sex makes you go blind. No. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
I wish it was something exciting like that, you know? I was once in America and I said that, and this lady just shouted, "Yeah, that's true. It's personal sex."
Yes.
And I was like, "Yeah, probably."
Well, I'm definitely evidence that that is not the case. So as I've gone all the way around past infinity and come out, I can sort of see through things now.
Oh. Well, you look good to me.
Thank you.
When I was about 6 years old, the doctors broke the news to my parents that by the time I reached my mid to late teens, I would become incurably blind. And I remember growing up, I was losing my sight a little bit. So I was wearing these thick glasses, the NHS glasses. Yeah. And then I remember around the age of 18, I woke up one morning and I couldn't see this poster at the end of my bed. And I just thought it was a bit of morning fuzz. So I closed my eyes and opened them again. And all I could see was this thick white cloud. And as I looked around the room, everything was just like misty and I couldn't see. And I remember that day I was walking around, you know, bumping into tables and chairs, and I couldn't see the faces of my mum and dad and my brothers and sisters. And I realized that this was it, that I was now blind. But I remember thinking, like, I didn't want to be blind, you know, I just wanted to go back to bed and wake up and be my normal self.
Yeah.
But the reality was that, you know, my life had changed forever.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a difficult thing for anyone to cope with, but someone at that age as well, that where life is, you know, beginning and you're about to kick off into freedom and independence, it must have been, you know, doubly hard.
Well, it was hard for a little while, but soon you realise that the world doesn't wait for you, you know. Everybody's around and, you know, everyone's 18, 19, dating, you know, getting jobs, going to the cinema. And I was there in my bedroom, like as a prisoner in my head as well. And I realized that, you know, we've only got the one life. So I just started to get out there and I thought, you're blind anyway, you know, what have you got to lose? And as I started to take my first few steps, things were hard. You know, I'd bang into things and people had so many preconceptions about, you know, what blind people can do. My mum and dad would say, like, you know, don't leave the house unaccompanied and all that. But within a few months, like, I just got on with it, you know. My dream was to be an accountant. And I thought, blindness is not going to stop me, you know. And I remember, because there was a reason why I wanted to be an accountant. Do you want to know why?
Yeah.
Like, when I was 12 years old, I fancied this girl in my class. And when she was asked, like, what she wanted to do when she grew up, she said she wanted to be an accountant.
Right.
So I thought accountancy was sexy.
Yeah.
Look, I can prove it. Is there any accountants in the house? Yeah.
Yeah, see? Yeah. I mean, for most people, I think the good thing about going blind would be they wouldn't have to do maths anymore. That would be the one.
Yeah, well, you know, my teachers, that's what I wanted to study, maths, yeah. Stats and finance, very particular. And my teacher said, look, you know, you're blind now. Do you want to study something easier, like, you know, English or history? But I wanted to be a sexy accountant, right? Nothing was going to stop me. So I couldn't see the numbers, so I just got my textbooks and lecture notes recorded onto cassettes. I mean, I don't know. You're probably too young, Richard, to know what cassette is.
Son. Yeah, I'm very young. I'm.
It was hard, and I mean, I got people to you know, read for me, and these cassettes. Like, I'd press play, and after 5 minutes, I'd end up falling asleep. You know, and feeling so much more confused than when I started.
Yeah.
But eventually things started to work for me. And I built up enough confidence and I thought, right, you know, I'm not going to tiptoe through life and be wrapped up in cotton wool and live in a protective box because people were saying that I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. So against the wishes of my parents and lecturers, I just headed off to Canada by myself. And it was amazing.
I mean, it's sort of astonishing. And like, yeah, everyone must have been against you doing it. But for you to make that decision to say, I'm going to go traveling on my own.
But you see, the thing is, when you hit rock bottom in life, it is tough, but it's amazing. That's what makes you actually do something about it. So if your life is like meandering along, it's hard in a way, you know?
Yeah.
I feel so sorry for all these sighted people, you know? So when I went to Canada, like, it was one of the best years of my life. And I learned that, you know, if you dare to push your limits, your world becomes bigger. And that's the kind of principles that I've been going with. You know, I'm just think I'm blind. What have I got to lose? Yes, I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is a great lesson for everyone. It has to be said, in that you can, you know, you're not limited. And people think they have limitations of all kinds, right? And they think there are barriers, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't. It might not be a physical thing, but they think I can't do it. But if you give it a go, that's the only way to find out, I suppose.
Absolutely, because I think all of our challenges that we have are relative to ourselves.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have a disability, you know, a physical disability or any kind of disability. You know, people have all kinds of challenges, and you know, applying that mindset, you know, I think is really important.
Yeah. I know how it is for you, because some of the audience will know this, because I have mentioned it a couple of times. I have aphantasia.
Well, that sounds sexy.
It does sound sexy. I'm blind on the inside.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I can see, but I can't imagine things. So I've got mind blindness. I think it's pretty much the same thing. And I've
I feel for you.
You should do, really.
I really feel for you. So, sorry, can you just explain?
So if I close my eyes and try to imagine an object, I can't see. I don't see an image of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, can I do this thing on you then?
Yeah.
Can you close your eyes?
Yeah.
Right. I'm so handsome. Can you see that?
I've still got, just because the light was shining me, I've got the outside of your your head and just on my eyelids. You are very handsome. Maybe no one's told you this.
No,
I
don't think I am. I think you must be visually impaired as well.
But no, I can't call it to mind. I can still sort of get, I have a sense of the way people look. So I can sort of, I know what my kids' faces look like, but I can't bring them to mind. Which, if you had that, as well, I'm presuming you can pull up mental images. Which again is, but having been sighted for a while, it must be a different experience. Or again, from someone who's never had sight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I genuinely feel for you, because, like, I suppose you can see, right, in real life.
Yeah, that's all. That's it, though.
Yeah, that's it.
I can just see everything. So I can terrible. See everything.
I mean, I'm gonna.
I'm not showing off, but I can see. I can see.
You could be getting a disability living allowance.
Well, I would hope so. People don't take it seriously.
Well, I do.
Thank you.
I'll contact my social worker on Monday and have you signed up. I mean, for me, you know, that is such an important thing.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, I could see up till I was 18. So when people describe things to me, like a beautiful orange sunset, like my friends do, I'm actually building that picture in my head. So when...
Must be nice.
Oh, it's it is. Oh, my God. Yeah. it is, honestly, it is. I do feel for you, because, like, sometimes... I mean, actually, I've got a question for you. So when you're reading, do you ever bother with things like audiobooks then?
Yeah, I do listen to audio. I'd read and listen to audiobooks. Until lockdown, I didn't even know I didn't have mental images. I just found out in lockdown that I didn't have mental images. I sort of assumed I did. And then I tried to make some, and then I realised I couldn't do them.
Oh, my goodness. Is that the first time you found out?
Yeah. So I just assumed, I guess I thought everyone thought the same way as I did. So when someone said visualise something, I kind of go, okay, I close my eyes and I'll think of my wife. But I'm not, I can't see her.
So was that your excuse not to get excited?
Well, it's all right if I can see her. If I'm in a different room, it's a problem.
Yeah, because, I mean, so if you were to read, for example, I heard you talked to the lovely Corinne earlier on about the 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Like, so if you were to read the audiobook, would you not get turned on?
It's
a bit personal.
I think I would. I probably wouldn't get turned on by that, because I think it's a bit weird. But I can still, you know, it's not, maybe it isn't as bad as being blind. I'm going to have a think about it.
I think they're very close.
I mean, if I was blind and I had aphantasia, that would be the worst, right? That's just like, then you're just in a world of darkness.
Well,
there must be people who have that.
Yeah, well, people don't actually realise this, but majority of blind people can actually see something. Right. So, like, I can see, for example, some lights. It's not black. It's like looking through a thick cloud. And, you know, I was walking in Snowdon recently and visibility was down to very little or nothing for me anyway. And it's just like, I guess it's just like that when people describe all you can see is like fog.
Yeah.
And that's what blindness is. But most people can see, but only about 25% of people are actually born blind.
Right.
Where they can't see anything at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting, and it's, you know, you've become this sort of ambassador for this, you know, you started up this travel company as a result of your of being like told you weren't allowed to travel, right? That's where it came from. So old companies saying that they wouldn't book you into things.
Yeah, I mean, after I was a sexy accountant for 7 years.
Yeah.
I had money in my pocket. I wanted to see the world. And when I approached mainstream group tour operators, you know, I faced rejection. You know, no one would accommodate me as a solo blind traveller. And I was told that I needed to bring a carer. And I thought, blimmin' hell, I'm a young professional. I don't need a carer, you know. And I just felt so restricted. And they said that even if you do bring somebody with you, you wouldn't be able to go on any, you know, excursions like walking tours, skiing, sailing. And all that left me feeling really powerless, you know, and I started to feel the world closing in. But I was determined, you know, I was so determined that I wasn't going to let that stop me. You know, I thought, okay, you're blind and you want to see the world. Well, find a way to do it. And I realized that if you want something in this world that doesn't exist, either you do without or you got to build it yourself.
Yeah.
So if I wanted travel to work for me, I had to change the way travel works. And in 2004, I created Travelize. Oh, can I do a sales pitch?
Yeah.
Perfect. Just where I wanted to bring it. So Travelize, it's a world-unique international tour operator that takes groups of blind and fully sighted people on holiday, and we bring them back too. You know, if they pay us enough. And so basically, most people on the trips don't know each other, and that's part of the fun, because each day we partner a fully sighted person with a different blind person, and in return for guiding and describing the sites, our sighted travellers go for half price. Yes. So you'd go, actually, I don't know how much I'd charge you. Did you say you're almost blind?
I can experience it at the time, but I can't, if you want me to talk about it later,
I think we would.
We'll be in trouble. Yeah,
yes, so we would want you to talk about it later.
I'd take three-quarter price for that.
Yeah, I think you could do three-quarter price. But yeah, we have so much fun on these trips, Rich, because, you know, has anyone been to Italy, Sorrento? Yeah. Has anyone been to Pompeii?
Yes.
Yes. Has anyone been to the ancient Roman brothels in Pompeii? Oh, a few? Just one person? It's probably just you and me. So we were stood outside with one of my tour groups of blind and sighted, and we were just stood outside this brothel, as you do. And one of the sighted travellers, she happened to be this lady in her 60s. You know, she works for the UN. And she was just finding it really difficult, you know. And she was struggling to describe, you know, how shall I say it, these explicit frescoes, you know, above each door. And I heard her say to her young 23-year-old visually impaired partner for the day, Jenny, do you fancy a cup of tea instead? And I heard Jenny say, no, actually, I wouldn't mind having the frescoes described, please. And I must admit, I enjoyed the description myself. But yeah, we have so much fun on these trips. And I'm really excited now. We're actually going to announce tomorrow. Can I announce today?
Yeah.
Oh, God, this is becoming a nice sales pitch. So tomorrow we're going to announce that Travelize is going to be working closely with HF Holidays. Has anybody heard of HF Holidays? Oh, yes, to one person. Brilliant. So we're going to be working with HF Holidays, right. And I'm going to continue to drive Travelize forward because I'm so passionate about it.
Yeah, but it's something that I guess a lot of people wouldn't think about. And if they did think about it, they might think, well, what's the point in blind people going on holiday? They can't see anything. But then, you know, there's more senses than sight, obviously. And, you know, there is a point, obviously, to doing it. So
I always think, Richard, that, you know, what's the point of going on holiday sightseeing when you are sighted?
Yeah.
Because like these days, correct me if I'm wrong, like most people will just get their cameras out, take a few pictures, move on.
Yep.
You know, for that perfect Instagram shot.
Yeah.
But when you're blind, you're actually really in the moment. So like if we were on a trip together, you know,
it might happen
with your problems as well. I need to see how they work together. But you would, you know, describe what's in front of you. You'd be forced to engage with what's there.
Yeah.
And in that process, you'd be gaining a much more vivid idea of what's there. And I'd be building an idea and, you know, we'd be touching things. Like when you're in Egypt and you touch, 3,000-year-old temples, you get a buzz. Like you're touching this thing that was created back then. Mm-hmm. And you use all your senses. So, you know, we're cooking in traditional Tuscan farmhouses. We're out there in South Africa getting pissed in the vineyards. You know, we're out in Peru on Lake Titicaca where these indigenous people live. And when I take my tour groups there, they've never met a blind person before, but they've made these little models of their islands that our people can feel. So I think one of the greatest things I get out of traveling is, you know, connecting with humanity that live, you know, in a totally different world from yours, but you're still the same.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And you've ended up going skiing and going skydiving and flying planes.
Well, I've gone skydiving, but not on purpose. I just happened to be going to the loo and accidentally opened the wrong door. And then there I am, my guide dog's flying out there with me. And how do I know when I'm about to hit the land? When the lead goes slack. Sorry, I don't have a guide dog, okay? Just in case there's some dog lovers
here. Not anymore.
Not anymore, yeah.
But I mean, I don't like skiing, so I'm surprised you'd want to go skiing. But is it true you want to fly solo around the world? Is that one of your ambitions as well?
How did you find that out?
You know, I know everything.
It's a bit embarrassing to say. It seems like a pipe dream, doesn't it? But yeah, one of my aspirations is to fly around the world independently. But if anybody wants to join me... I haven't found any takers yet, but it'd be a pleasure. But yeah, I just feel the technology's there, yeah. Rich. You know, like computers talk, like my iPhone talks to me. You know, technology is so advanced that I think that, you know, why not? You know, I could fly the plane. I mean, half the time, you know, the pilots aren't even flying the plane.
Yeah.
So why not?
Yeah, well, you know, but that's sort of the story of your life, isn't it? And where it's led you, just this, why can't I do this? I'm going to do this. I'm going to try and do this, is these incredible places. So and you've obviously done a lot of broadcasting. How did that go for, you know, what was the moment that saw you kind of first asked to do TV?
Well, it was back in 2004. I was being an accountant. And, well, yeah. thanks. Oh, God, I'm giving a huge plug to accountancy tonight, aren't I? And then one Friday afternoon, I get an email from the BBC asking if I wanted to trek 220 miles across Nicaragua. And I thought, well, yes, why not? And so they were wanting me to join a team of 10 other people with different disabilities. And we had to work together as a team. And Nicaragua, if you don't know, I'm sure you all know, is in Central America. So we went the narrow part of Central America. So we went from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific Ocean, and I was pushing a wheelchair through 40 degrees dense heat in a jungle, and then across a shark-infested lake and up a 5,000-foot volcano to make it to the finishing line, to the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, what could possibly go wrong? But the best part of that trip was each time, like, there was, we started off with 11 people and there was only 7 left in the end. Don't worry, it wasn't the crocodiles. it was us, because we were getting hungry. they're all fine, but each time, like, someone couldn't make it anymore, we were obviously really sad. But that was the only time we were allowed to drink a bit of rum. So it was just like, it was so good. It was like, sorry you're going, but yeah, let's get the bottle open. You know? And yeah, it was an incredible experience. So I guess that was the first time. Yeah. I remember it was so incredible. It took us a month to do, and I wanted to give up. It was just really difficult. And we were up on the volcano, and we slept on the shoulder of the volcano. We spent like a night out there. And they said, look, Amr, you know, if nature calls, wake somebody up. You know, don't try and find the edge of the volcano yourself, you know. And so I was in a tent with Adi Adepitan.
Yes.
And, you know, he's in a wheelchair. And so he basically, I wake him up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I says, Adi, I need to go. And Adi's like, oh, do you mind if I just direct you from the tent? And I'm like, well, okay, well, you're the best offer I've got. And so, like, I started walking out and he's like, 11 o'clock. No, 1 o'clock, you know. And had he got it wrong, I would have fallen 2,000 foot into the shark-infested lake.
Oh, wow.
But you know what? You think, wow. You know, I'm more of a danger to myself in my apartment. Like, you know, I'll be in the kitchen and I'll forget that I've left a door open, like a you know, kitchen door open. And I'll just, like, go down to get something and I'll suddenly crash into the side of that.
Yeah.
And there'll be blood gushing out. I'm like, Jesus, you're not even out in a park or something. You know, this is embarrassing. But yeah. But I'm not completely fearless.
No.
No.
You do seem to be.
I'm not, because, I mean, people read the stuff on the internet and think, oh my God, this blind guy is a bit crazy. He's fearless. But do you want to know what really scares me?
Go on.
Animals. I'm so scared of animals. Like, I don't care if it's a guinea pig or a rhinoceros, right? It's the same. Like, I know that if I was to reach my hand out, like, one end is full of teeth and the other end... Well, we know what the other end's full of, right?
Go on.
Yeah, so I would say that animals, like, you know, it's just, I'm just so frightened and it's so embarrassing sometimes. Like, I took my tour group out to, you know, Florida, and we were in SeaWorld, and this man just said, like, look, do you guys want to come and pet the stingrays? And I'm like, well, I thought the clue is in the name, you know? Stingrays, isn't that what killed Steve Irwin?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I'm pretty much justified in my fear of animals.
Yeah.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I mean, what I love about you, and what I think what probably makes, you know, is one of the things that makes you like very good on TV as well, and to talk about these generally, is that you treat this with humour. As we're seeing, there's humour all the way through this. It would be easy to spend your life feeling sorry for yourself, and, you know, even if you were going out and doing stuff. How important has humour been to for you personally, as well as for educating other people, I suppose?
I think sense of humour is amazing, you know, because I think that people feel very, you know, uncomfortable with if you've never met a blind person before or someone in a wheelchair, like, you don't want to say the wrong things. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's heart's in the right place, but they feel uneasy about it. So humour is great because it just, like, you know, there's that moment, like, oh my God, he laughs, you know, so it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, so it just relaxes everyone, and I guess that's what probably helped.
Yeah.
You know, and life can be tough, you know, like, you know, don't get that impression that I'm always, you know, positive. Like, there's moments when you're not, but, you know, we all have to find our own ways of finding, you know, getting back up to being positive again. For me, it's like maybe going for breakfast or a coffee with a friend, you know, working out in the gym, then I feel a little bit positive. And then I have these thoughts of, oh, I'm going to go and fly a plane now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's easy to be angry, isn't it? And it's easy to be angry if you feel, I mean, a different person would be angry that life had dealt them this hand, and, you know, and let that bitterness kind of soak through them. So, but it's, there's no point in doing that, is there?
There's not, because we just have one life and this is it. And, you know, you and me, Rich, we're moving on, aren't we?
We are.
And, I mean, we don't have many birthdays left. Sorry, this is getting depressing, isn't it? Sorry. Is this the kind of inspiration you wanted?
Are we in a suicide pact? Yeah.
I don't mind. Yeah, but you don't mind.
I don't mind if it,
oh God,
we can go together. Let's jump into a volcano
now.
Together.
I'm frightened now. No, but, like, yeah, life is short, and so, you know, you just have to make the most of it. And I found that, you know, if you can be happy, it makes life go by, you know, so quickly and easily. And it just puts everyone at ease.
Yeah, and you. I thought you were pretty cool, I have to say, with all this stuff. Then I found out you're president of the Ramblers. So,
is that affected my image now?
Like, now I don't think you're cool.
Rambling is so sexy. Look, I've moved up in the world. Accountancy was sexy, but I do like to ramble. Walking is just amazing. You know, I absolutely love it because, you know, when you're out there, okay, I can't see the views, but, you know, when I'm walking, I'm feeling the ground below my feet. You know, I feel the sun on my back. You know, I hear the birds, could smell the wildflowers if it's that time of year. And, you know, yeah, if I can't see a beautiful view, that's fine because I can do what you can't do, which is... Sorry.
Let's all kick the disabled person.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
Let's all kick down.
Which is, I can, yeah, sorry. I can imagine what things look like when people describe it. So when people are describing a view, it's almost like I've got this clear canvas and someone's drawing something with their words. And, you know, because, like, we established that I, you know, had sight, that just creates such a beautiful image for me. It's like a lovely... I feel bad saying all this because you're missing out. But I feel so engaged,
yeah.
You know. And it's the same when I'm Watching movies, you know, the first movie I ever watched that was audio described, which is actually my favorite movie of all time. You'll never guess what it is.
I won't.
No, don't even try.
Okay.
It was Pretty Women.
Wow. Okay.
You know, absolutely loved it. Like, you know, and I thought, like, in a movie you're supposed to get bored half the time, like, because I didn't know what was going on. But you know, in the movie, it's like back at the hotel. Vivian is sitting on the bed with nothing but a tie on. And then later my friends told me that she wears boots as well.
Right.
So we need to correct that.
Right, I'm going to ask you an emergency question.
Oh, God.
It's adapted especially for you.
Oh, no.
Have you ever sensed a ghost?
Well, actually, as the first part of my life was sighted.
Yeah, do you see?
Yeah, when I was about 10 years old, we were sat in the living room with all my family and extended family, and we were talking about all these, like, ghosts and voodoos and, you know, all these types of things, like having a round table with the glass thing on it and summoning up the ghosts.
Yeah.
And I went to my room, and honestly, like, I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw a red light and I thought it was a ghost. And for years I was frightened of the dark. So I think I can say that I did see a ghost.
Yeah. Was it just the smoke alarm?
It probably was. Yeah. But I was so convinced.
Yeah.
You know, and my brother was like, he was sleeping in the same room. So it couldn't have been, but it really... I genuinely believed it was, and it impacted me for years to come. But I'm okay now, I think.
Good. They're probably not real.
I guess when you're blind...
Yeah.
When you're blind, the beauty is that nothing really frightens you that much. Like, when I could see, I was scared of going on roller coasters. Like, my sisters would often go on the roller coasters, and I would pretend I had a sore stomach, but... When you become blind, you don't actually get frightened. You don't get frightened of the dark. You don't get frightened of heights. It's good.
Yeah.
I strongly recommend just, you know, taking that next step.
Yeah, we could give it a
go. You're almost there.
Yeah, I'm nearly there.
Just do it.
So I want to talk about your OBE, if you're an OBE. Oh, we've had a couple of OBEs on, but not, you know, it's a...
Is that... Thank you, old, bald entrepreneur.
who gave you your OBE is what I always want to know.
Well, I don't know, because it's going to... It's going to happen in a few weeks.
Oh, is it going to happen?
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
I just talked about it too much.
Okay.
Yes, so I'm going to the palace.
I thought you were saying, I don't know because you couldn't see him, is what I was like. I thought you were saying... Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I probably still won't be able to tell you afterwards. Okay. But yes, on the 2nd of November, I'm going to Buckingham Palace.
Yeah. If it's the Queen, then you'll have sensed a ghost. That's what I'm going to be. So look out for that.
Yes.
It's so brilliant, obviously, and it must be very exciting.
It is. You know, but I guess the main thing is, like, a lot of people have helped me. Oh, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but, you know, when you're blind, you're relying on a lot of people along the way. And, you know, all those people that I think back to my uni days and, you know, during my professional corporate days and through television, you know, a lot of people have actually helped me. And it just feels good. Like, and yeah, it feels good that I've achieved it. You know, I am proud of myself. You know, for doing it, you know, it does feel good. So, yeah.
But you know, but it also, I mean, it's very well deserved. I think your stuff, it feels, you know, it feels like you're just doing this, and it is a good example for everyone, regardless of their own personal circumstances. And it doesn't feel, you know, preachy or anything like that. It just feels, you know, it feels like, look, this is what you can achieve if you set your mind to achieving stuff. And so it does, you know, as well as all the stuff you have done with charity and everything, it's incredible. You were when I was booking you for this, you were just about to head up Mount Kilimanjaro, which, so I presume you've been up Mount Kilimanjaro?
I think so.
Did it take ages? Because then it probably was.
Oh my God, it was hard. Like, you know, at the beginning, it felt great. Like, it just felt like walking up in a British forest. You know, the sun was kind of shining, and we were walking along, and suddenly you'd hear weird sounds. You know, and then you knew that you were in Africa.
Yeah.
And you know, someone would say it's like a flying squirrel or a blue monkey. They just make it up, you know, because I couldn't see. It was brilliant. We went up through the forest and into the grasslands, and you know, it was tough. Like, I had not practiced at all. I hadn't walked much, and so my legs were tired on day two, you know. And then when we got to the near the top, at the last point with the huts, we were in this room. We walked all day. We had a few hours to rest. And then at midnight, we were making for the summit. And I was in this room with 12 guys in bunk beds. And I needed a wee. And the toilets were so far away. And I thought, what shall I do? So I took a she-wee with me.
Okay.
So these 12 guys are sleeping in their bed. And I'm stood in the corner weeing into this thing. Right. And I was so glad that someone told me that you expand it, because otherwise I'd be getting splashback, you know. And of course, it needed to be expanded, right, Richard? For the obvious reasons, yeah. You know. So but yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was an amazing experience.
You went up to the last bit at night time, right?
Yes.
So does that give you an advantage over the
It does to some extent, but they did have torches, you know. I did think about taking out their batteries, you know.
Is that just because of the heat that you can't go up in the daytime?
No, it's because of these sighted folk. They want to see what's called a sunrise at the top, you know. So we have to walk at midnight, and it takes about 7-8 hours to get to the top.
Right.
And I just thought it was a bit overrated. You know, I would have personally liked to have a sleep, have my breakfast, and then head up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really, really tough. The oxygen level at the top is 49% less oxygen than at the bottom. And no one was talking because they couldn't speak. And so I'm like, da-da-da. It felt so depressing at that point. It was so bleak. And we were just marching. We were doing the Kili March. And, you know, they say go bole bole, which means slowly, slowly. So imagine you're really tired, you're hallucinating, no one's talking, and you're just going up this incredibly steep climb. But then you're thinking, oh my God, I'm almost 20,000 feet above sea level, and I'm almost at the highest point in Africa. And there's no life there. There's no flowers there. And it just felt so incredible. And it was so cool. I was just so in the moment. It just felt like I'm not supposed to be here, but I am.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. And then we made it to the top. I was with a lovely team of people. And then, you know, then we had to come back down.
Just on a toboggan all the way down there, right?
That's so
they're coming down is nice and easy. The things I love about you are, you know, like you did MasterChef, and they asked you to do MasterChef, and your problem with doing MasterChef was you said, well, I can't cook. That was the reason you turned it down.
Yeah, well, the bosses of BBC Celebrity MasterChef contacted me and said, in 2019, you know, do you want to go on MasterChef? And I said, I panicked and I said, look, I'm blind and I can't cook. And they went, okay, and then left me alone. And then in 2020, I get another call inviting me to join the series. And I said, look, I'm still blind and I still can't cook. But this time they insisted. And as we went down to London and I was sitting in Oxford Street, and I suddenly thought, Amr, you know, you always say yes to things. Like, what's stopping you from doing it? So I said yes, and everything was fine until they announced the filming schedule. You know, they'd given me 3 weeks to prepare.
Right.
And in that 3 weeks, I had to go from barely cooking anything to MasterChef level. And so my PA, bless him, he's in the audience, Matt. Hey, Matt. Have the legs recovered? He can't drive, so he cycled to the supermarket and brought me tons of food. And
right.
Whilst I'd be researching and doing my homework, and I got myself into a massive panic, thinking this isn't going to work. But you know, in the end, it was great. I didn't see any problems.
Right. But you know, for anyone to go, if someone said I've got to be on MasterChef in 3 weeks' time, I would absolutely have a meltdown. I wouldn't be able to. I definitely wouldn't be able to do it. And I cook a bit, but I wouldn't. I don't want to.
But you say that though, like, I mean, I'm blind and I couldn't cook.
Yeah.
But it is amazing, like, you know, in life when you have to do something, you do it, you know?
Yeah.
And
I don't think that's true of everyone, though. I think that's you. I mean, it's good advice, and people should do it. But you know, it's obvious for you, the challenge is, you know, it's just challenge accepted, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess I've just got that mindset.
Yeah.
But I've realised that, you know, no matter what challenge you face in life, the best thing to see a challenge or an obstacle is that it's an opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity with a little bit of a grumpy face on it, you know. But by having a positive mindset, it's really, really helped me, you know, with everything that I've done.
Yeah.
And so on MasterChef, I mean, I it took me 10 minutes to peel an onion first. So I got a sack of onions and I started peeling them, chopping them, and I got it down to about half a minute. And the best thing was, because I didn't need to see my fingers, I was actually one of the last ones out of all of us, you know, to make any mistakes and cut myself. And because I learned to like roll my fingers back, so the knife would hit the knuckles, the flat of the knife would hit the knuckles, but everyone was getting freaked out because I'd be looking at them while my fingers were going at full speed, you know?
Psyching them out.
That's it. But it was terrifying, but it was such an incredible experience, you know. I just couldn't believe, like, I was in a, you know, professional situation. You know, we were cooking in restaurants, and we went and we cooked in canteens. You know, in MasterChef, you cook for 200 people. So we cooked for all these guys, and then there I was serving the food, you know, and I just had this totally out of body experience where I just didn't feel blind, because I'd say, hi, would you like chicken? Would you like potatoes with that? There you go. Until I said, hi, what would you like? And Gethin Jones, who was next to me, goes, Amr, there's nobody there. You must be blind, you know? And but you know, often people do think that, you know, I am sighted. Like, you know, I live in Leeds, actually. And does anybody go out to Greek Street? I've had many a good night on Greek Street, right? But whenever I go into bars, like, some girl will come up to me and say, look, that's not nice what you're doing. And by the way, I'm not doing anything fine, you know? And I'll be like, sorry, what? And they'll be like, oh, you know, pretending that you're blind. They do say that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I end up having to say, look, it's not nice what you're doing. And they're like, what? Pretending that you're a young woman. You know? I'm sure you can take the wig off.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is, it is, but I suppose that's testament to how much, you know, you're joining in and not looking as people, again, imagine or assume that a blind person should act, I suppose. So you are educating people by that, even though it's a, you know, there's that moment of nastiness, I suppose, where you have to educate them by telling them that they're being dicks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's, you know, but it is a testament to the fact that, you know, that you're subverting the stereotypes that those people expect.
Yeah, I suppose they don't expect that. But, you know, recently I went for a cataracts operation and I said to the surgeon, you know, please don't cure my sight because I'll lose my USP. So, I don't know, I probably can see right now. But I'm just pretending.
Well, you know, you don't know. It could be the greatest hoax perpetuated, but it's going to come out in 20 years' time.
Actually, I did a programme, you know, with the BBC where they actually thought that I was sighted.
Right.
So, you know, it was, what was it, Travelling Blind?
Yeah.
At Sarah Pascoe. And so me and Sarah, we went to Turkey and she was my eyes and I don't know why I was of hers, a bit on the side. No, I was showing her how I travel as a blind person. And suddenly, like, after we filmed it and the rushes went back to the BBC, they said, oh my God, he doesn't look blind. We need to do something about it. You know? So when I came back to Leeds, they took me to Harewood House. And I know, and they made me run into a barrier. Can you believe it? They made me run into a barrier, BBC, you did.
Wow.
If this ever gets published. So it was funny because, so my personal trainer was behind me running.
Yeah.
And he was saying, okay, Amar, you're coming up to the barrier. 3, 2, 1. And my hands would come up, you know. So it looked like I could see what I'm doing.
Right.
And then the producer, like, winked at my personal trainer and said, look, don't tell him this time. What? And I ran right into the barrier. So it does get me into trouble.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm the BBC into trouble now. So that's that's good. And so you don't sound like you're from Leeds originally.
I don't know. Yes.
What brought you to this wonderful city that I'm coming to think isn't as awful as... It's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like the people in the bar thing saying, why do you live in Leeds? I mean, I know you can't see it, so it's fine, but it's what's brought you to Leeds?
Well, I was just heading out for a pint of milk and I took the wrong roads. No, after I graduated from Strathclyde Uni in Glasgow, I applied for so many jobs and I got refused, and the only people that hired me as a graduate accountant was BT Cellnet in Leeds.
Right.
So I started off as an accountant at the Arlington Business Centre, you know, near the White Rose Shopping Centre. So if any of you were there in 98 till 2001, you probably saw a crazy blind guy walking around thinking he's sexy.
Oh, that's good. Look, what is there anything coming up that we don't know about? Is there anything you can talk about that you're doing? I mean, you're always doing something. So,
I've got quite a bit of TV coming up.
Yeah.
Some I can't say, but I'm doing quite a lot of the one show films at the moment.
Right.
I guess in the next week, I went down to Brighton to film this old blind veteran lady. She was 104.
Right.
And she was amazing. So she's almost like twice your age. And I know it's hard to imagine someone could be twice your age, Richard. I'm only joking.
I'm no accountant, but... Yeah.
But yeah, she was amazing. She was 104. And I was like, you've just moved, you know, houses and you're in this new centre. How do you find it? She goes, I love it. You know, I've got my eye on this young man. He's only 92 years old, you know, and she was just incredible, you know. So you do these amazing films and, you know, it made me feel really good, you know. Yeah. It's really inspired me. But yeah, I've got a lot of one-show films that are happening at the moment and some other TV stuff that I'm working on.
Yeah, and I mean, you've done TED Talks and all these sort of things as well. So you sort of keep... Have you written a book? Are you going to write a book?
I'm in the process of writing a book, yeah. But it's a very slow process, isn't it?
It is difficult.
Yeah, I might need your help on it.
Okay, I've done about 15 of them, but you know it's not that
exactly. Well,
but a lot of them are just stupid questions, to be fair. So.
Well, if that works, maybe well, I need to. Well, do you know who's helping me actually?
No.
Edwina Curry.
Right.
You know, Edwina, right? She's my bestie. Like, she is absolutely... Honestly, like, I'm not into the politics, but she is really cool, honestly, because we went to pilgrimage. We did BBC's pilgrimage, and Edwina was there, and she'd always come down. She goes, you need to write a book. And every time at breakfast, she actually gave me a title of the next chapter.
Okay.
So I've got 8 chapters, titles from Edwina Curry.
Right.
And she calls me up. I know it's so bizarre, isn't it? But Edwina calls me up almost every few weeks saying, right, how far have you got with the book? but yeah, it's a slow process.
Yeah.
I sound like Corinne, don't I? But I'm hoping that my book is as good as Corinne's music when it eventually comes out.
Dream on is what I'd say. So it's...
Well, that's... I can understand that, Rich, because I know that you won't be able to visualise all the beautiful descriptions.
Oh, look, it's such an absolute pleasure to meet you. And there's so much more you must come in again, because there's loads more we could talk about. But I'm going to let you go. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up, the amazing Amma Latif. Thank you so much for coming, everyone. Thank you, man. I really enjoyed that. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I love you all. Thank you for having me. You have been listening to Rahalastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Amma Latif. Scant Regard are providing the music. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you also to Ben Evans. He's fantastic. Thank you to Beck Cliff, my tour manager, who got me to this gig. It could never have happened if it wasn't for her. Thanks to George Lingford, who did fuck all to get me to this gig, but it was nice to see him when we got there. Thank you to everyone at the Leeds City Variety for looking after us so nicely. And thank you to everyone in the audience. What a brilliant crowd you were. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.